And I had the good fortune of seeing Craig get owned harder by his mom
Oh my
than I
God.
have ever seen anyone get owned by their mom before.
And then the worst part was that she just repeated right after she did it. She just said three times, owned.
Episode 68 of There Is No Offseason, Baseball Prospectus' podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. So welcome back, Brett, and Craig, hello, long time no see.
It pains me that we're not here in person.
I know. We had a great Craigcation together. Brett, how bad did it feel to just have to watch Craigcation happen without you?
It felt awful. I won't lie.
We did talk to you plenty, though.
You did, but still, it's not the same.
When we did it, he was at work and we were at a bar watching baseball. So.
That's true. Yeah. For the listeners at home, when I fly down to see Craig, we don't sightsee. We don't do something we wouldn't have the opportunity to do otherwise. We just sit at a bar next to each other on Twitter watching baseball, which I think says a lot about our relationship. Yeah, I was trying to explain this to people when I got back. They were like, why did you do that on vacation? And I was like, because it was utterly relaxing.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
We got to troll Matt Collins. We got to G-chat him. He was not pleased, so that was nice. We met Ryan, who was the managing editor of BP Wrigleyville, so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the good fortune of seeing Craig get owned harder by his mom.
Oh my God.
I have ever seen anyone get owned by their mom before.
And then the worst part was that she just repeated right after she did it. She just said three times, owned.
She danced on your grave, dude. Like the body wasn't even cold. Yeah. Do you wanna share or do we have to?
No, I think you better do it.
Okay, so we're sitting at dinner. It's me, Craig, Craig's lovely mother, Craig's lovely fiance, and someone random, and we're all eating a meal, which is a great thing to do at dinner, and somehow Craig's physique comes up. I forget how there was arguing about salad dressing. It gets hazy. But at some point, Craig's mom makes mention of Craig trudging rather than having the ability to walk or run. And when Craig tries to defend himself, his mom just says, well, how do you think you get to look like that? It's via trudging. And the room just goes silent.
Actually, there was a lot of laughter, if we were being honest.
Well, there was a moment of silence before a lot of laughter. And then her mom just goes, owned, three times. And it was great.
Yeah, owned. It was, yeah, there was a lot.
Yeah. So that was a personal highlight for me, and I think we'll get into a few more highlights as the podcast goes on. We're going to do a reader email show because we haven't answered any of your crappy emails in quite a while. So what we are going to do is tackle three questions, sort of about theory more than about anything specific. Then we'll get into three questions about some particular moves, and take a quick break, and then talk a little bit about current events. So this will be the first episode of Tino without a list in 4 months, 5 months?
2 years?
Yeah. You're going to be okay, Brett?
I think so.
I don't think so. Okay. So we'll start with our first reader email, which is from Bobby. Bobby says, how do you all react to a prospect expert who ranks a player way differently than consensus? For example, everyone knows John Sickles is great, so when he ranks Mike Clevinger 28th on his new top 175, and you can't find another top list that has him ranked at all, does that make you scoff, or does it make you look at that player again to see what you might have missed the first time? Thanks. So Craig, we'll give this to you because I know you had sort of a heavier hand in helping out with the prospect list for BP this time around. And I don't know if you really need to answer this in terms of BP's list versus other lists. I'm more interested in hearing how you reconcile different lists when it comes to Dynasty.
Yeah, I think that when you look at someone like Clevinger, I mean, he wasn't even on our BP top 10 for Cleveland. That said, he was included as a notable omission because of kind of the positive vibe that he's been getting since the end of last year. He had a very strong year last year. The buzz over the winter was very positive on him. The Indians are very positive on him. And so we made a point to bring him up to say he didn't make the list, but he is worth knowing. It's a very deep system. And I think, you know, 28th was a substantial departure, I think, from the way that most of the industry feels on him. I do think it's representative of the fact that a lot of people really like Mike Clevinger. And, you know, I think he has a chance to make a significant jump in offseason lists from 2015-16 to 2016-17 if he doesn't kind of exhaust his major league or his rookie status, which I think is a possibility. The back half of that rotation, which we'll get into later, is a little up in the air, and I think he has a chance to be in the majors. But I think, you know, it's tough to throw out a blanket answer on this. It depends a little bit what the ranking is and how far a departure it is, and then as well, like, who it's coming from and what the player is. Some of them you can certainly look at and say, yeah, I get it. I get the interest in pushing a player like this. I get wanting to be ahead of the curve on a guy like this. Others, there are situations where you do scoff, where you say, this doesn't jive with anything that I've seen or heard, and it makes no sense.
So, Brett, to follow up on this, what do you do when you feel so differently about a player than either the rest of the industry or any other list? And, you know, I think it has a tendency to come across as a little hot takey sometimes, and that's certainly not just picking on this Clevinger ranking and Sickles. You know, I think we were accused of being a little hot takey on, like, Raimel Tapia a few years ago. There are plenty of examples of this where one outlet or one person is just way, way higher than everyone else. So what is your sort of thought process, Brett, when that happens to you and you have an inclination to rank, you know, like Dom Smith eighth or something?
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem weird when you're doing it, right? And Craig can attest to this with the work that we did on the prospect list this year. But it's the same thing every year. It takes a good amount of time to put together these lists, and they're done well in advance of when they actually come out. So it's not like when you're putting together the BP 101. And I'll use an example that actually came up in trade talks in one of my leagues today. We have Jake Thompson ranked, you know, quite a bit higher than he's ranked at BA and a couple other outlets. We have him, I think, in the mid-30s, I think high 30s, maybe 33, 34, something like that. And he's in the 70s or later on some other lists. And, you know, when we're putting together that list, we're not thinking, oh, hey, we're going to be really high on Jake Thompson. We just, you know, we like Thompson, and that's just where he naturally fits based on what everyone thinks. There's really no calibrating going on between these lists. So when stuff comes out, it might feel hot takey, and I've read enough of these that I know when they feel hot takey, but it's really just about who you as a fantasy owner trust, and this is where you can really take advantage if you've been in the league for a while and know what people's tendencies are. If you know someone in your league is someone who, you know, is all up on minor league ball and read Sickles stuff like it's the gospel. And, you know, he's really good. And, you know, I think there are a lot of products out there that are really good. And, you know, if you know that about someone, then yeah, if Mike Clevinger gets ranked 28th, then you send a trade offer to that guy the next day. Yeah. And it goes across the board. You have people who are ranked very differently on our list versus BA's list versus Keith Law's list versus John Sickles' list, and it helps to know more about your league mates in this sense, so that you know when you're not kind of wasting your time.
But yeah. But to answer the question specifically, you know when he says, like, does it make you go back and look? I think the answer has to be yes. I don't, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
If, you know,
yeah.
If you know, yeah. I think the answer has to be yeah. You go look at them and see what am I missing? And it might be that you're not missing anything. And if that's the case, you go, well, you know, either we disagree or either we disagree or I think he's crazy or whatever it is. But I think certainly the first reaction has to be, let me see what, you know, let me make sure what I'm missing, you know, maybe check with some, you know, if it's a real prospect list, you can check with someone, you know, talk to the people that you talk to when you create your list and say, you know, am I missing something here or not? But I think, you know, for me, the first reaction is absolutely to say what's going on here, not to point and laugh.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Brett, I like your point about sort of leveraging knowledge of which sources people in your league prefer whenever this comes out.
Yep.
Okay, I'll move us on to the second question, which is from John Smith, who has the beige toast of names. I'm sorry, John. And he says, good day, lads. I was wondering if you could speak to trading older players age 35 and older in deeper leagues. In my specific case, I am interested in the value of Jose Bautista. Then he gives some details, a 16-team, 5x5 category, 25 players and 15-man farm. You know, given the lack of depth, he wants to trade Bautista to improve his farm team. Pretty generic situation he's in, where he has an older player he thinks he needs to rebuild. And this is a question I want to talk about a little bit because it's a situation I'm going through right now in TDGX, sort of specifically with Robinson Cano, which we don't have to harp on because we've spoken about it on Tino before. I've been unable to find a good partner for Cano. Carlos Gonzalez is another guy I have who's not quite as old as Bautista. I haven't even really shopped him yet. I was able to trade guys like Curtis Granderson and Hunter Pence, but they're not really perfect fits for the Bautista tier of player. So in terms of speaking to this general trend, Brett, what are some challenges you've faced in terms of moving older players in your time as a Dynasty League player, and how have you sort of worked around them?
Well, you have to find the right, buyer, because as the Dynasty game increases in popularity and as more people, you know, care more and more about prospects and young players, and, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, a young player is more valuable than an older player, but there are definitely a lot of owners out there who will not budge on players who are that old, even guys who are as elite as Bautista. I mean, you're talking about an on-base league. Bautista is a top 10 player, and it's really not even particularly close, I don't think. So you're dealing with a subset to start, and then it's a matter of which of those owners that have the predilection to actually put money into or resources into an older player who's really good, and you don't know how many of those people are currently rebuilding. It doesn't make sense for them to trade for. So it's a subset of a subset. And then of that group, you don't know who has the prospects to deal. You could have someone who, you know, absolutely respects the value of Jose Bautista, or someone like Robinson Cano, or someone in that of that ilk, but just doesn't have, maybe their best prospect is, Ian Happ. And there's just not a deal really to be had, especially if that owner is already in contention and has sold off some of their younger assets likely anyway. I think everyone as in general is too bearish on older players, and, you know, I take that back. Not too bearish on older players, too bearish on older superstars. I think you know, Ben, you talk about guys like Curtis Granderson, and Granderson's a perfect example of someone who's productive, but not a superstar. and not, you know, not even really a star. He's just a reasonable producer. And there's never going to be a good market for a guy like that. That's the kind of guy you have to bundle with someone else in order to get some additional value if you're trying to rebuild.
Exactly. But
for Bautista, you know, the expectation from a value standpoint should be that if you're looking for a package led by a prospect. Or a young major leaguer, you should be looking for at least a top 10 prospect pedigree player who's right either in the majors or right at the cusp of the majors as a centerpiece, with things around it. Bautista is even with his age, he's still a clear top 50 asset in dynasty leagues for me. And, and on base, that's even more, the case. So, Ben, I'm curious to throw it back to you to see whether that makes sense, whether that jives with what you've seen in your experience and how it's affected your ability to rebuild.
Yeah, well, I think what I've wrestled with is I sort of feel like people are starting to ping me and say things like, well, you haven't been able to move Cano, like, you know, our base player, are you ready to just take what I'll give you? Are you ready to take just one top 30 prospect, or are you ready to settle for draft picks, or are you ready for these non-star MLB players in return? And of course, there's a little bit of nagging, you know, doubt in the back of my head that, well, maybe I just missed my window to trade Cano at a good time. But I'm still pretty confident that I'll find a way to move him. I think there will be, you know, a contender whose second baseman goes down later in the year, or there will be someone who is, you know, maybe competing by surprise and realizes that a middle infielder of Cano's caliber in a 20-team league like TDGX could substantially alter his chances of making the playoffs. So I'm content to sort of hold on and bet that I can get at least what is being offered to me right now, right? Because I'm not judging it necessarily only against what I want right now. I'm wondering if I can get what's being offered to me right now in the future so that I can at least work on getting more until then. So if another year goes by and I still have Cano, maybe then I'll think about lowering my asking price substantially. But as of right now, I think I'm going to keep the bar pretty high and establish the price league-wide for Cano and sort of wait and see if a more appealing situation unfolds as the year progresses. And I think it hasn't worked for me yet, so it's hard for me to fully endorse the strategy, but it's one I feel pretty comfortable with.
I think we've made this analogy on the podcast before, but it's the fantasy equivalent of the Cole Hamels Philadelphia situation.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that's the absolute reason why, to me, waiting, you know, letting the season play out makes sense because of that. Just because someone's going to find a reason to do it, to push them over the edge or to attempt to or something like that.
How many more times do you think we'll have to talk about me owning Robinson Cano on Tino?
I give it maybe like 6 weeks.
Yeah?
6 weeks total. I mean, I don't know how many times that is, but...
Oh, so like 3 years of Tino. You think I just won't trade him? Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. I will move us on to our third question from friend of the podcast, Dave. And friend of the podcast, Dave says, "Hello, Tino hosts. It's been a while since I've posed a terrible question to you guys, so I hope you've enjoyed the break. My question revolves around forming a pitching staff. In this terrible offensive environment, I've tried to acquire as much offense as I can and let pitching stay on the back burner. Having one really good starter and working the wire or hoping a prospect comes up. However, this doesn't seem to be a good strategy because it usually just destroys my rate stats. Do you have any specific strategies for when it comes to getting an ideal pitching staff? I would prefer that your answers are roto-focused as I mostly do roto leagues and I am a selfish person. Thanks, Dave. P.S. Congrats on writing and publishing another book, Ben." Well, thank you, Dave. Brett, I will kick this out to you because it's sort of an overarching strategy question and because in the leagues in which I have played with you, I've seen you do this pretty well. So how do you go about building a dynasty fantasy staff?
Well, you have to start with some sort of base. it's one thing to build up offense, but you don't want to leave yourself completely exposed on the pitching side just because pitching counts for half of the stats. So, you know, not to bring everything back to TGX, but my pitching staffs tend to look a bit like what my staff looks like there, where it's a couple of pretty good starting pitchers, and then it's me shuffling through a whole bunch of crap trying to find something that sticks. Usually with and I usually like to pair that with some really strong relievers to give myself a little bit more flexibility on the rate side. And I think that's an underrated way to go about it. Whether you're dealing with closers or not, it doesn't really matter. I mean, guys like if you're talking about closers, guys like Andrew Miller Zach Britton, Cody Allen, guys who have a lot of strikeouts and are good from a rate standpoint, or pitchers who don't get saves and are like that, you know, especially in a deeper dynasty league, relievers who are not closers who put up some really strong stats are often very underrated, and they can help to ease the pain of streaming a little bit or taking a few more risks with your starting pitching. But you know, the way that I find that you take advantage of that is when you're building a strong offense, you build the major league offense first, and you try to backfill that with some offensive prospects that will have some attraction on the trade market. And then you have assets then either way. You have major league assets and minor league assets on the hitting side that you can then flip for pitching, which is a lot easier to do than the opposite. So there are definitely opportunities to do that. In a different dynasty league I'm in, I've been building up my offense for a while, and I had Tim Anderson as sort of my best prospect in waiting, and I flipped him and Dan Vogelbach and Yadier Alvarez in the off season for Matt Harvey. So you can use that firepower to get firepower. It's just a little bit more difficult. And as far as building actual pitchers, the one thing I really like to do is to take chances on guys who are not pitching prospects, but guys who have pitching prospect pedigree, who just haven't worked out. I'd much rather gamble on those players than your Tyler Glasnows or your sort of it pitching prospects, especially considering their price. When you see where some of these pitchers come from, I'm the guy who will. That's why I'm heavily invested in Tyler Skaggs. Not that I think Tyler Skaggs is that great, or that I think he has a good chance to be better than Tyler Glasnow, but nobody wants Tyler Skaggs, and he was once really good, and he could be pretty good. And those are the kinds of guys that, when you find, they make a big difference. If you have a couple of SP1, SP2 types, just to balance you out.
I was just going to say, as an example of that in TDGX, so some young pitchers who I've tried to gamble on recently are Trevor Bauer, womp womp. Tyler Skaggs, who knows? Daniel Norris, who knows? But Vince Velasquez, who after today makes me feel pretty happy. So just adding on to Brett's point, I do think you need to sort of amass like three or four of those players in the hopes that one or two of them pans out.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, even, speaking to like the post-type guy, or even just someone who didn't get as much love but might still be, he was a prospect. The guy I'm thinking of in my mind, because since we're on the Angels, was, you mentioned Skaggs, but Tropiano kind of works in that sense too. I don't think he has a ceiling that Skaggs does, but in terms of what you're going to pay for him versus a premium for a guy like Glasnow or someone like that, I mean, taking someone who's there in the majors in a beneficial home park isn't a bad play.
Yeah, absolutely. He's probably available on waiver wires in a lot of leagues.
Right. And I think he's someone who, especially at home or in pitchers' parks, make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we should note George Bissell has a piece coming on Tropiano on Friday, April 15th. So check that out when you get a chance.
And because George now edits this instead of Mao, this podcast will actually be out. So,
well, just put pressure on George, but sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Well, he's lost. Okay. I will move us on to our fourth question. We'll sort of move away from... Sorry, George. We'll move away from theory and more to some specific questions. So this one comes from Doug. Doug says, "Oh, Tino Gurus, master of Dynasty Leagues. In general, I would much rather have a hitter than a starter in Dynasty Leagues, but in his 16-team 5x5 Dynasty, he's super high on Giolito as he thinks he's the next great ace. Very bold take, Doug. He wants to compete this year, but is more likely eyeing 2017, and he asks which side of this trade we would prefer. He gets Lucas Giolito and Ben Zobrist, but he gives Jason Hayward and Dylan Bundy." He lists his team, but I don't think it's especially relevant to this offer. It's a good overall team. He does have some depth in the outfield, although it's not incredible. So, Craig, we'll kick this out to you. Is the idea of trading away Jason Hayward for a starter really scary, even if that starter is Giolito?
No, I don't think it's that scary, to be honest. I think especially in a typical 5x5 where, you know, you don't get to make as much use of Hayward's OBP skills, I do think that, you know, all in all, I think I'd rather Hayward, but I also am very much a strong believer in Giolito and in his ability to perform basically as soon as he gets called up. So I do think it depends a little bit on when you need him. And since we're talking next year, I think that makes a little bit more sense in terms of making this deal. If you want to make the play for Giolito and Zobrist, I think the downside is you're getting significantly older in getting Zobrist compared to someone like Bundy, who, you know, the problem with Bundy is that we have no idea kind of what role he's going to be used or how effective or when he's going to get hurt next. I do think, you know, given the team that he has here, you talk about his mediocre depth in the outfield. The pitching is very top heavy. He has Arrieta, Darvish, and Stroman, and he does have Mats. But after that, it's, you know, Cashner, Samardzija, Desclafani, and then Homer Bailey and Matt Cain. So that's not a strong staff. And
In a 16-team league,
it's pretty strong in a
16-team. That's really strong staff.
It's strong top three, but after that, it's not. I think it drops off. I mean, Mats is fine, but after that, it's bad.
Yeah, I don't know how many. Yeah, I don't agree with you.
I mean, Cashner, Desclafani, Samardzija are all bad, and Bailey's not healthy, and Kane is horrible. So.
I don't love Samardzija, but I'm not ready to write him off as bad.
Desclafani is a totally fine starter in a 16-team league.
If Desclafani is your seventh starter in a 16-team league, you're in okay shape.
Okay, be that as it may, I'd be fine taking Giolito here. I don't think it's necessarily the best value, but you know, I also do default to, you know, if you like someone a lot, I think, you know, we play for fun. So if you want to own that person, I think that's fine. And I think this is within the range that it's not like a deplorable decision to make otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one that I don't know if we make often enough. Brett, what say you?
I get it, but I wouldn't do the trade. I would hang on to, I'd hang on to Hayward.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It's tempting. It definitely gave me pause. Especially because I'm pretty much out on Bundy at this point, but I think I would also retain Hayward, especially given the strength of the front of his staff, regardless how you feel the back end of it.
I don't think I'd do it even if top three. Yeah, the fact that Bundy's in the deal doesn't even register for me.
Yeah,
which is sad, but it doesn't.
Right. Yeah, that does make me sad. He was the safe one. He was the safe starting pitching prospect, and now he's dead. Okay, so we'll move on from a question from Doug to a question from Doug. And Doug says, mighty triumvirate of dynasty guruism. In a dynasty points league, do you like Harper, Desmond, and Colabello, or Correa, Sale, and Dickerson? Thanks. Oh, what the hell? From Doug, but his name is Jason. I don't care for that. But yeah, so regular dynasty league, Bryce Harper, Ian Desmond, and Chris Colabello for Carlos Correa, Chris Sale, and Corey Dickerson. Definitely interesting. I have gone back and forth on this, but I actually think I would take the Correa and Sale side as much as I love Harper. I think Correa is about as close to Harper as you're going to get, and then Sale just really tips the scales for me, and I know he's eventually going to get hurt, and morons will say I told you so, and they'll be wrong. Those are two top, 25 dynasty assets, 20 dynasty assets. So I'm going with that side. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The gap between Harper and Correa is not as big as the gap between Sale and Desmond, if you want to call him the second best piece in this deal. Yeah. And frankly, I think Dickerson's better than Colabello as well.
So, substantially better, I think.
Yeah, and certainly getting more playing time. So, yeah, I'm honestly like your gut instinct is to say don't trade Bryce Harper, just don't do it. But the truth is that I don't even know if this is that close for me. I think it's Correa, Sale, and Dickerson by a pretty healthy margin. Brett.
Yeah, I agree. I think the difference between Harper and Correa is bigger in a points league than it is in a roto league. But yeah, Sale and Dickerson versus Desmond and Colabello is not a fair fight at all. And it makes up for the difference there.
Plus, you're getting Correa at shortstop. I mean, it works out really well.
Yeah, Craig, I think you're right in that, you know, I was sort of talking through it because of that initial no feeling whenever you see Harper.
That was legitimately the first thing I thought, too, was like, you're like, just don't trade. And even when Correa was the first piece, I was like, yeah, it's not going to get there. But
it did.
Yeah.
And I think the three of us are probably particularly prone to saying no because we've seen so many shitty Trout and Harper bat signals. That the feeling is even stronger for us. Although everything was spelled correctly in that one, so that's a doozy. Okay, we'll move on to the final question in our reader email bag. Email bag? Email bag. Why not? The last one's from Brian. Brian says, hey guys, just joined an existing keeper league and got an offer I want some help with. Team I got is pretty rough, good batters and no pitching, so he's looking to rebuild. 12 teams, and it looks like 7 offensive categories, the standard plus total bases and OBP. He would give up Joey Votto and would receive Jock Peterson and Orlando Arcia. Again, this is in a league with standard 5 categories, but also total bases and OBP. He says, as of now, I have Starling Castro as my middle infield and no one else on my roster is shortstop eligible. My starting first baseman would become Pujols and Lind, so that's not awful. Jock would add to an outfield of Stanton, Braun, Brantley, Polanco, and Chu. And he also has 2 utility spots, so he's not worried about not being able to play any of those guys. So I think an interesting question specifically in this format, and for that we will turn to Brett.
I don't think this is close at all. I give me Votto. 8 days a week. In an OBP league, Votto is good as gold. Peterson is much better in on-base leagues than average leagues, but it's not, and Arcia does not make up that gap for me.
Yeah, so for me, I think Arcia is starting to fly up the list of prospects who are overrated in Dynasty. Certainly not in MLB, but I just think he's going to be more of a solid average-ish middle infielder than anything truly special in dynasty leagues. I think you guys would be better equipped to answer that, but I feel like he's starting to get a little too much play in dynasty leagues.
Well, even regardless of that, I mean, in a league like this, and this is where you have to really be careful when you have extra categories. Arcia is the only category he's really going to be at all impactful in is going to be stolen bases. And if stolen bases is one of seven categories as opposed to one of five categories, that really puts a serious dent in his value. And the fact that the two categories that are added just make Votto even more valuable, just, you know, that, you know, that all factors in there.
I got nothing to add. That's 100% accurate.
I've got nothing to add to Craig Goldstein story. Craig, does the rest of your family, and I don't need this to be a hard cut out right away. I want to have an actual conversation about this for 10 seconds. Does your family know about the Enya situation?
No.
Brett, no. Does anyone in your life know about this?
No.
No. This came up for
this
me.
This won't surprise you, Ben, but no one in my family listens to this podcast or really
Craig,
reads any
Craig,
of my
shut up. I'm not talking to you.
Okay.
This came up at work the other day. Long story how that came up, but Enya came up and I began trying to explain this and I couldn't find the words, which will not surprise anyone who listens to this podcast, but it's a very difficult concept to explain.
It is. You would think that the two do not go hand in hand, but somehow we've made it work.
I think that's a generous characterization, but
somehow we've forcibly made America listen to this.
That'd be a good like sub tag for Tino. Enya. Welcome back to episode 68 of Tino. We hope you use that break to think of some Enya transitions and send them to us, because clearly we are running out. So with the mailbag portion of this podcast behind us, we are going to just spend 15-20 minutes talking about some current events that have occurred currently. I'm Pert Hapley. So we'll start with Kyle Schwarber. Brett, I'm sorry. I'll just preface this by saying I'm sorry. But I think talking about it is a natural part of grieving. So we haven't Tino'd since Schwarber tore his ACL and will be out for the year. So talk about what you think this means for his sort of long-term prognosis. Is he still going to catch?
I don't know. My gut says yes, but not probably less than he was even scheduled to catch this year. But that's there's really nothing backing that up. The answer could very easily just be no. Every time I think about this injury, I just become a walking overused meme. It's bad.
It's a stark description.
It is. This doesn't affect him at the plate at all, in my opinion, and that's, you know, that's where the real value came in. We talked about this when Schwarber was drafted and when we were figuring out where he was going to rank on the Dynasty 101 and all of this stuff. And you know, I had always treated Schwarber's catcher eligibility as sort of the icing on the cake and not the reason for his value. So, you know, yeah, missing the year sucks. And yeah, if he's done catching, that sucks. But the dude can fucking hit. And I'm not concerned about him at all from a long-term standpoint, just as far as putting up stats go. It might be mildly concerning where the stats come from, because, you know, realistically, you know, if he's an outfielder, even if he doesn't get any better, he's still one of the top 10 to 12 outfielders in dynasty leagues for me starting next year. I mean, if you discount the injury, but. It creates a buying opportunity because people are worried about the catcher eligibility. I think they're overly worried about the catcher eligibility, and it's just sad. Everybody knows I have a very strong affination for Schwarber. I have for a long time, and you know, I just want to see him play, and not seeing him play makes me sad.
So, Craig, entering 2017, will you consider Schwarber a top 25 Dynasty League outfielder?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think he's got to probably be in that range. Without thinking about it too deeply, I think that he has to be. I don't see any way that he wouldn't be with his power output, and I don't think there's any way that he won't be ready for the start of the season. So unless there are some complications where he's missing time, I struggle to see a scenario in which he's not good enough to be that. And frankly, I might suspect somewhere closer to the top 20 than top 25. Is that unreasonable?
No, I was just trying to do it off the top of my head, and I don't have a list
yeah,
in front of
me. Yeah, I'm not sure. Brett, where if you had to ballpark it, where would you put him at?
I'd say comfortably in the top 20. I'd say borderline top 15.
Yeah.
Like right
yeah,
before, just see before, any he takes his, be. Before he takes his next at bat.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I'm that. I'm not ready to flirt. I don't know. Again, I can't because I don't have names in front of me. That feels a little high for me for Schwarber if he doesn't have catcher eligibility.
You said an outfield.
Well, you're ranking him among outfielders, so none of them have catcher eligibility.
Right.
Well, okay, Brett. Where does Chris Davis rank on an outfield list?
He's ranked with the shortstops.
Okay. Okay. Next current event. Sadly, AJ Pollock is out, possibly for the entire season. We don't really have a timetable yet. He broke his elbow again, which is never a good thing to say in baseball.
Wait, did he break his elbow before?
Yes.
Wow. I had missed
that. Yeah,
it's
a second fractured elbow.
Yes. So I think because Pollock blossomed so late, people don't realize that he's a little older. He will be 29 next year. So I guess this is a little vague, but Craig, how much does this hurt his Dynasty League value for you? I mean, he was an easy, top 7 Dynasty League outfielder this year. How far is he going to fall, if at all, in your eyes?
I mean, the damage is, are you saying like from this point forward, is that?
Next, sort of the same exercise we use for Schwarber. You know, next year he's a top X Dynasty League outfielder. What's your number?
I'll give him top 10. I mean, he'll be 29 next year, and I don't know that I see him being likely to break his elbow a third time necessarily, or is that something that I'd be assuming would happen? And given that that's the case, I still think he's a guy who will threaten 300 and hit 15 homers, steal 20 bases, and I think there's upside beyond those figures. And he's also someone who doesn't swing and miss a lot. So if you're talking about a 300 average, it's kind of weighted a little heavier because he has more hits overall. I don't know that I see pushing him out of the top 10. That's what I'll go with, top 10.
Brett, any contrasting thoughts?
I would not have him in the top 10. I going back to the beginning of the season when everything was rosy and he was healthy, I had him at 6 overall among outfielders. But another year, another major injury, I don't see how he holds off a couple of these names on this list that are behind him. Maybe he sneaks in exactly at the 10 spot, but that's about the best possible outcome for him, in my opinion.
Okay. Let's go with one more sad face, longer topic before we get on to two happier things. Ken Giles, who the Phillies gave up all of the everyone for, is not closing. And not only is he not closing, he has been horrendous. Obviously, super early in the year, so no real reason to draw a ton of conclusions from this. But in 4 appearances in 3.2 innings, he has already given up 5 runs. He gave up 14 all of last year in 70 innings. It's been really, really bad. So, Brett, we'll stick with you. Where do you see this going? Do you think that someone with Giles' natural talent is likely to overcome this and be closing within a few months? Do you think he's really burying himself in the depth chart here? What's your hot closer take?
So I am buying Ken Giles with all of the reasonable assets I have right now. it's really hard to – I mean, it's not really hard. All you have to do is give up home runs. But he's allowed 5 base runners this year, and all of them have scored. So when you give up a home run every time you pitch, that makes things a little bit more difficult. But he's there's nothing inherently wrong with him that that would cause that is causing me to be alarmed long term. And people are just freaking out over Giles right now. There's it's really hard to think of an example of a player going from you know, a pretty consensus top 150 dynasty league asset last year, not even last year, like a month ago, to someone who people are dropping, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's not like Giles doesn't even have a history of struggling to start seasons. There's too much talent here for this to continue, in my opinion. Craig, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think that if you're in a league where you're competing right now and you lack kind of bench space and other options, you're in a really tough spot, and that you don't necessarily have the option to just hold him. I mean, if you need saves, I guess what I would push back to you is, if you're in a situation where you were counting on him for saves, you don't have another option, kind of how far down the closer list would you be willing to go and trade him in a 1-for-1? If you need saves, you're competing, you don't have the time to wait, you're falling behind at the moment, who are you, what's the lowest, or I guess the highest, like who are the guys you're willing to trade him 1-for-1 for?
I would, if I really needed the saves, I would trade him for anyone other than probably a bottom 5 closer.
Okay. But the point is you're willing to go pretty far down.
I'm willing to go pretty far down. I'd really be trying to hold on to him as much as possible. And to be honest, even in a league where you're kind of forced to play him, I'm not even concerned enough that I would necessarily bench him. I think the strikeouts are going to be there. I don't think he's going to allow 70 home runs this year. I'm really just not that concerned, I guess, is the crux of it.
Okay.
Sounds good.
We've talked enough about players who have struggled or who are injured. So let's talk about two of the better stories for Dynasty League players. I didn't do that on purpose. God damn it. Trevor Story, who has already 48 home runs or something like that. And Nomar Mazara, who is up and making Craig happy every day. So let's talk about Mazara first. Craig, do you think he's here to stay, or do you think he'll end up back down if Chu ever manages to stay healthy for more than 3 weeks?
I am starting to think, I mean, this is being such, you know, such swayed by recency bias and whatnot, but I'm starting to think that they won't be given the opportunity to send him down. And I'm not sure whether that's going to mean less playing time for Ian Desmond or Delino DeShields or Shin-Soo Choo or some form, you know, some variation of all three. But he's such a natural hitter that I don't really see him struggling for an extended period of time, although it would be completely reasonable if he did. But I don't know how they take him out of the lineup if he produces even, you know, I don't think he needs to stay hitting 400. If he hits 270 with some pop, that's someone that they're going to be able to use, and possibly, you know, maybe it means trading Mitch Moreland for some back of the rotation help or some, you know, serviceable piece elsewhere. But I think they've got to be able to find a way to keep him in the majors. And that's not something that I was assuming when I wrote the call up. I figured once Chu is back, I thought they would end up sending him back down. And they still might for a brief period. I don't know if they miss the Super 2 deadline or not, or not Super 2, but gaining the other year control. I think they still might send him back down for a few days just to do that. But I think he's probably up for, I would say, 450 at bats, something like that. Brett, am I being swayed too much by his hot start?
I don't think so. I mean, he looks ready.
He looks like,
I mean,
he belongs.
Yeah, like there's no other way to say it. He looks like a legitimate major league hitter, right off the bat.
Yeah.
So Brett, if Mazzara gets 400 plate appearances this year, what's his triple slash?
I think his triple slash is 283, 35, 430.
That's it. So basically, I this sounds weird, but those are the numbers I used to always throw out for Bogarts. So basically, we think he's Bogarts in the outfield, sort of.
You could look at it that way, yeah.
Those numbers are almost exactly. That's why it stuck out to me. Okay, Trevor Story is hitting a real casual 343, 351, 1057 with 7 homers. So, Brett, already has 7 homers. How many homers is Trevor Story going to finish the season with?
18.
Craig?
20, 2-0, yeah.
Interesting.
What are you saying?
Because he already has 7, I will go 23.
Yeah, I almost said like 22, and then I cut short. I mean, look, this is obviously an incredible start, but he's got like something. The last time I looked, hold on, I can have it in a second. He's got a homer per fly ball of 44%. And even if you think he's a legit power hitter, that number is going to drop significantly. He hasn't walked, although he has worked plenty of deep counts. But he's swinging and missing just like we kind of thought he would. It just, at this point, the contact he's making has been home run contact, and I just don't see any way that holds up. I mean, it's not the fun way to look at it. I hope he does incredible things forever because it's amazing. But
I mean, I don't think he's going to hit for a good average from here on out, but I think the power is close to real.
I'm totally with you. You know, last year I put him on the ones who could jump, you know, for this year, in the futures guide, I did that from last year into this year. And I mean, he's someone I definitely believe in the power. I think he can stay at shortstop, but you know, the reason that you thought he was a 20 homer guy heading into the year rather than something more than that was because, well, he has probably 30 homer power if he played in Coors every day. He swings and misses enough that, you know, he's just not going to make that type of contact all the time. It's just that, you know, this first 10 games, he is making that type of contact.
So I'm curious to jump in and ask you guys this. So where do you rank Story among dynasty shortstops right now?
I will say, Craig, I'll try to help you out. Like, Orlando Arcia is 16, Ketel Marte 17, Tim Anderson 18, Semien 19. I would looking at the
That's
TDG.
A different list. Yeah, that's
TDG
not
TDG list.
I have. Okay.
Well, Brandon is. Would you rather have Trevor Story or Brandon Crawford?
Brandon Crawford.
Yeah, I think I'd go Crawford.
Okay. Would you rather have Trevor Story or Ketel Marte?
Who's gotten off to a horrible start. I'd stick with Marte, but I think that's really close.
I like Marte, but I think I would go with Story.
Okay. What about Story or Starlin Castro?
Castro.
Story or Franklin Barreto?
Barreto.
Craig?
I mean, I had Barreto as like a top 25 prospect and Story as like 90, and nothing Story can do in 8 games can make that gap go away.
I'd probably take Story there just based on lead time for my perceived lead time for Barreto. But like, you have Jorge Mateo behind Barreto, and I would probably take Mateo I think that's really close for me, Mateo and Story. I'd probably take Mateo. And
I'm shocked I would that you would take Story over Beredo.
Yeah, I don't like him as much as you do.
Yeah, I don't think you would have taken Story over Beredo 10 days ago.
I mean,
None of us would have. 10 days ago,
I didn't know Story was going to be the guy. I mean, I honestly thought Christian Adames would have been the guy.
You can never go wrong betting on Christian Adames.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So I think I think everyone's sort of in the same range, that he's sort of a very back of the top 20 Dynasty League shortstop right now.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And Ben, by the way, I would just say for Beredo, like the moment he makes the big leagues, I think he's more valuable. But I think there's value in that Story's there now. That's all. That's the gap for me.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, lightning round really fast. We'll just do some quick hit topics about players we haven't spoken about since the last time we T-node. We'll start in Boston. Pablo Sandoval is on the DL with a fake injury, and Rusney Castillo is back in AAA. Brett, is Pablo Sandoval a top 25 Dynasty League third baseman?
No.
Is he a top 35 Dynasty League third baseman?
Yes.
Okay. Craig, is Rusney Castillo ever going to be a top 40 outfielder?
At this point, I'm going to say no.
Okay. I agree with both of you on every account.
Sarcasm?
No, for once I meant that. yeah. Marco Gonzalez, Tommy John surgery, sad face, hadn't looked that good anyway. Craig, is Marco Gonzalez ever going to be a top 100 fantasy starter?
No.
Brett?
I mean, what do you have to do to be a top
one? Yeah, actually, that's a good
fantasy
point.
Starter.
What is, yeah. That was,
is Chris Tillman a top 100 fantasy starter? And I hate Chris Tillman.
Probably.
Probably, right?
The problem is Gonzalez might not be a starter coming back from this.
This is true.
I mean, if he starts, it's not that hard to, that's not a high bar to clear. But I think there's a substantial chance he's a reliever. I mean, they used him in relief before. He was good at it. He'd be coming back. They could put him in that role right away, and he might never get out.
Yeah. This is a question that might be a little bit longer than a lightning round question, so we don't have to go deep into it. But I'm really curious to get to just get both of your quick hit opinions on this. Gonzalez is a low velocity, guy who does not rely on a breaking ball. Does his profile make you any more or less confident that he'll come back fully from Tommy John than your standard, you know, low to mid 90s with a breaking ball profile?
No, for me, doesn't really factor into how I think about it.
I don't have any reason to think that it would make a big difference. Does it for you?
I think it kind of makes it more difficult for him to come back just because it seemed it guys that have less of a margin for error. I think I would be less confident in him coming back than someone with a slightly more.
You phrased it as a breaking ball issue. I mean, he has less of a margin for error because he's never had a like a plus fastball.
Yeah.
So it's less of
it could be either.
Okay.
We'll move on to Vincent Velasquez, who struck out 16 batters today. That's not bad. He also had a dominant first start. So, Craig, what do you think Velasquez's ceiling is in a TDGX type, you know, 20-team dynasty league? He could be a number two starter, number three starter. Where do you think his ceiling lies?
Yeah, I think ceiling is probably like low end two or high end three. And I think he's got a really solid chance of hitting high end three because he's going to miss bats. I think my biggest question with him is, you know, whether he's going to stay healthy. And that's kind of always been the question on him. But with that, you know, when he's on the mound, I think he's really good. As we're seeing, you know, obviously today was a different story, but he struck out 9 in his first game too. So it's not like this is some sort of isolated incident. he's always been able to miss bats. So I think high end three is where he's at.
Brett, Trevor Bauer opened the year in the Indians bullpen and not in the rotation. Will he get a chance to start again?
This year or ever?
We'll start with this year.
Yes.
Will he... Do you still view him as a long-term starter?
Yes.
Do you think that will happen in Cleveland?
Yeah. Yes. I think it can happen in Cleveland. I don't think his days of being a starting pitcher in Cleveland are completely over. I would not be surprised at all if it's in another organization, though.
The year is 2020. Am I still drafting Trevor Bauer in the last round of every league I'm in because I think he's going to break out?
No.
I think you overestimate my intelligence.
No, I think he'll be a reasonable back end-ish starter by then.
How many organizations does he end up with on at the end of his career?
Eight.
Six.
I think six is about right.
All right. Real quick with two more prospects who have recently come up. Malik Smith with the Braves, obviously attractive for our purposes because of his speed. Do you think he's up for the whole year, Brett?
Yeah, especially if Hector Olivera can't stay out of jail.
That is a good point.
Yep, and as long as he doesn't take fastballs to the face.
Right. Craig, how many steals does Smith end the year with?
Ooh, good. I'm going to say 31.
Okay, now we'll reverse it. Max Kepler is in the majors. Craig, does he stay there all year?
No.
Brett, how many plate appearances does Kepler get in the majors this season?
60.
60?
Yes.
Okay. Brett, when this career is said and done, how many organizations will Enya have started for?
Listening to episode 68 of There Is No Offseason. I am not Ben Carsley, and I have no idea what he says at the end of these things because I usually hang up before he does it. But we will see you guys soon. You can find us all on Twitter. You can find Ben at Ben Carsley. You can find me at Dynasty Guru, and you can find Craig at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in can't do it. Goldstein. Does he say Goldstein at the end? How many times does he say Goldstein? If I say it over and over again, will it make it better?
This is great. You're doing great.
Thanks, Craig. You can email us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. We read a whole bunch of your emails now, and all of the other emails that have been sent to us to this point have been terrible, so do better. We will see you guys in 2 weeks for episode 69. Save all your jokes for then. Bye.
You did a great Ben impression insulting all the listeners. That's perfect.
It was the least I could do.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
to do it.
That was the reggaeton horns were perfect.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Lincecum retired or isn't playing, and that's the real shame for Goldschmidt.
Oh, it really is.
Because didn't he? He owned him.
Yep.
Is Goldschmidt even a top 10 set first baseman without facing Lincecum?
I should tell Sam to write an article about what Paul Goldschmidt is without Tim Lincecum in baseball.
Hang on. I have Goldschmidt's stats against Lincecum, okay?
Yeah.
34 plate appearances. He has 2 doubles, 7 home runs, 17 RBI. He's also walked 4 times. So that's a 536 batting average. He's slugging 1357 with a 1916 OPS. That's fucking insane.
That's my favorite thing.
He's also grounded into 1 double play.
Oh, can we get Keith Law in here to tell us that those stats don't matter? Yeah, that's just random. It's really just a statistical clustering is all it is.
I agree for the most part that those things are not helpful, but on some level, like
no, if a guy is like 3 for 4, it's not helpful. Oh, but like yeah, that right. level of ownage across seasons yeah. is
right. There's meaningful. Clearly something going on.
Yeah, yeah. Like BVP yeah. is bullshit, but like certain types of guys hitting certain types of pitchers, I think that's like, you know, that's obvious.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally okay. on board.
Those are crazy numbers, though.
I let out a physical god fucking damn it when I heard myself say Tyjon Walker.
Yes.
Re-listening to Tino in the car, yes. And I said, Tyjon Walker, I physically hit my steering wheel. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Brutal.